to learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Let the One Plus One show be a soundtrack to your Sunday nights. Tune in to WHFR.FM on Sundays from 9 until midnight for the One Plus One show, hosted by Mrs. Robinson. On the One Plus One show, you'll hear a variety of indie rock. So listen to the One Plus One show, the soundtrack to your Sunday nights.
Hi, I'm John Bomarito, and I can honestly say one of the best things to happen in my life in the last 7 years is to do a show here at WHFR called Acoustic Alternatives. Since July of 2002, I've been bringing you the best singer-songwriters, modern folk, and Celtic music on the airwaves. You can join me and listen every Sunday from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m. right before Mountain Stage for a locally produced radio program that includes some of Michigan's finest songwriters as well as acts from around the world who deserve your attention. It's Acoustic Alternatives, Sundays on the station making waves, WHFR.FM.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Hello and welcome to the Forum series of talk shows presented here on WHFR 89.3 FM, the station making waves from Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn, Michigan. Every third month, those with a fifth Tuesday, we present the Dearborn Heights News and Views, a program devoted exclusively to issues affecting the city and the residents of the city of Dearborn Heights. And now to your host, for this week's show, Ned Apigian, and to this week's guest.
Thank you, Jay. Our guest today is none other than the mayor of the city of Detroit.
Dearborn Heights. We have Detroit on the mind today. The mayor has an interesting background, which we're going to give you some of his background before we start asking him questions. And welcome to the show, Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you for having me as a guest, Ned.
We're honored to have you. You're the top official in the city, and you can't do much better than that. Well, his name is Daniel S. Poletko. We'll just call him Dan. His activities read as follow. He has a long history of public service. While still a senior at the University of Michigan in Dearborn, he was elected to serve on the city council and continued serving for 29 years. For most of these years, he served as council chair. Throughout his tenure on the council, Mayor Poletko also worked as a certified public accountant and continued his education to attain 2 master's degrees. Mayor Poletko holds degrees from the University of Michigan, Dearborn, University of Detroit, Wayne State University, and Henry Ford Community College. For over 25 years, the mayor worked at Ford Motor Company as an account manager. In 2002, he retired and was elected as the 17th District Michigan State House Representative. He stepped down as City Council Chair on January 1, 2003. Mayor Poletko began serving the residents of Redford Township, sections of Dearborn Heights, and sections of Livonia as their state representative. While serving in the State House, he was signed to the powerful Appropriations Committee and served on the Higher Education, Corrections, and Community Health subcommittees. To respond to an unexpected vacancy, Mayor Poletko agreed to step down from the State House and was appointed by the Dearborn Heights City Council to serve as mayor. On January 14, 2004, Dan Poletko was sworn in as the new mayor of the city of Dearborn Heights. As mayor, he immediately directed his efforts into 3 main areas: balancing the city's budget, creating a cooperative atmosphere in the city, recognizing the diversity of the community as a strength. Under his leadership, the city has achieved balanced budgets despite cuts in funds from the state and the generally depressed economic condition in the state. He has also instituted several cost-cutting initiatives to increase efficiency. His appointments of directors and commission members have started to make the city government reflect the diverse cultures that exist in the city of Dearborn Heights. Mayor Poletko prides himself on being accessible to the public by having an open-door policy and meeting residents in their neighborhoods and local businesses. Mayor Poletko holds membership in several organizations, including the Joint Management Committee, the Conference of Western Wayne, the Downriver Community Conference, the Michigan Association of Certified Public Accountants, the Friends of the Cardinal, the University of Michigan Dearborn School of Management Alumni Association, and the Vista Maria Board of Directors. He is also an active member and usher at St. Linus Catholic Church. In his spare time, Mayor Poletko enjoys participating in auto racing, stamp collecting, and attending sports events. Well, I sure learned a lot by reading this myself.
That was a long introduction, but thank you, Ned.
Well, we have to know who we're talking to. Now, one of the important things of being mayor, I suppose you came into a situation, whatever that situation was, could you kind of describe it? And based on what you saw, what is it that you thought needed to be done? And therefore, you established some goals. So what did you find when you became mayor that needed fixing?
Well, I was in the state house, and I was starting to receive calls from various individuals telling me that there was a possibility that there might be a vacancy as a result of some health issues with then-Mayor Canfield. So people were asking me if I would be interested in being mayor, and I was very happy and pleased to be in the state legislature. Considered that a real honor, and I had been serving less than a year when these calls started coming in. At first I said, no, I want to continue doing a good job as a legislator. Then the resignation of then-Mayor Canfield took place, and the council appointed me on a 7-0 vote, and so then I became the mayor. The thing that I quickly realized is that I had to spend a lot of effort and concern dealing with finances and budget, which is
your business.
That is exactly, it just fell into my strength. Unfortunately, my whole 7 years has been reinstituting. One of the things I did is I looked at our particular city budget in relation to our neighbors. And I looked at...
That's an interesting way to approach the problem.
Yeah, and I looked at where was Dearborn Heights spending more money than Redford, than Dearborn, than Westland, Taylor.
Garden City.
And Garden City. I looked at all...
Dearborn would not be fair. It's a different, bigger setup, more expensive.
Except that I looked at, because of the fact that... But there's some similarities. To operate a city, you're running a DPW, you're running recreation. And so, in particular line items, we would look at. So, for instance, one of the things that popped very quickly was I was trying to figure out why in Redford Township they were spending $50,000 a year on telephone expenses, and we were spending $145,000. So I called my good friend, Supervisor Kelly, and he said, oh, we learned from our school districts there's this consultant whose specialty is in saving costs in telephone services. So I got a hold of her. She came in, and I found out, if you can believe this.
I remember the story. You told me this a couple of years ago, but it's interesting to read.
We as soon as she came in, she looked at our bill, and she says, you know, a 30-year bill is for those phone number listings in the yellow pages and the white pages. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And she says, no, you're spending $38,000 a year to have each of your department heads listed in the phone directory. So we agreed that we would include the mayor's office, the police emergency, fire emergency, and take all the other numbers out. And then there were some other changes, so that saved us $38,000. We got a new phone system, and we made other modifications, and so then we got our numbers in line. But there were other similar situations that we went through and found out where we could make particular savings. Now, there's one item that I'm still, in fact, I had DTE come and see me, and in fact, I haven't really publicly announced this, but I'd be more than happy to share, so you got kind of an exclusive. DTE is basically has to get rid of the mercury vapor lights that they have in the region. And I have a pilot project going on in the Joy Road Telegraph area in which we're putting LED lights up. And DTE came, and because of the fact that we've established a very good relationship, they're going to be changing all of the lights to LED over the next few years. And so that's going to cause our...
Who's going to pay for that?
They have to end up making the change, so they're going to take on the costs themselves, because the mercury vapor lamps were outlawed by Congress. You can't have the mercury anymore.
Gee, I didn't know that.
So they're going to have to make a complete conversion. Well, the difference is where will they start? And because of the fact that we did the pilot program with them on the LED light, which have gone up, residents have said very good things about them. And in fact, it is so nice that you can read a newspaper in the middle of the night out there. It is so clear. So consequently, we're going to be probably one of the first communities to convert to LED.
Well, it's the latest technology. It should be it should be an improvement.
And one of the things that, and I had been searching for new lighting, because one night I'm sitting out in my office, I'm looking out on Fenton Avenue, and I'm looking at the lights. And when I was a young boy, I had our house had the street light in front of the house. So at night, my room was like I had to get used to going to sleep with this
that light in your face.
And so I'm looking at this light on Fenton. I go, man, those are the same lights when I was a little boy.
Yeah.
And the technology had not changed. It's the old arm and the paper light. So I had worked with numerous individual companies, Johnson Control, amongst others, to look at, because the city pays almost $800,000 a year in public lighting. So any...
Ah, that is an interesting number.
Yeah, so anything that we can do. Now, I did
so
get...
So the LED is more efficient.
Much more efficient, gives off a more concentrated light. And the other nice aspect to this whole thing is I had... It was the second year I was in office, I think second or third year, I hired an individual to go out and, like, check, because I found out we had never checked the electric bill. I mean, it just came in.
That takes me to the story I think I remembered. Somebody's name was on all our bills, and they got a percentage of the bill.
What was that about? That was with the healthcare one that I found out we had an agent of record that nobody knew. And so
was that what it was for healthcare?
Yes.
I thought it had to do with one of our utility bills.
Well, it was Blue Cross Blue Shield permits.
Listen to this, Jay. This is very interesting.
Blue Cross Blue Shield permits an agent of record. And somewhere years ago, I'm not even sure, Blue Cross Blue Shield said this gentleman had been on here for 15, 20 years, so it had to be a decision made back in the 80s. But he got listed as an agent of record. So for doing nothing,
he got a commission.
He got a commission. And so consequently, when we went through Blue Cross Blue Shield, we said we got to reduce these health care bills because they're so big. And so
the next time Mayor O'Reilly comes here from Dearborn, we better tell him.
You know, I'm giving you a lot of my secrets. When I go to conventions or meetings, the other mayors and supervisors, they don't want to brainstorm, but they tell me like early outs and stuff. I go, there's nothing creative with that. And they go, well.
What's early outs?
You know, where they you give a program in which you let people retire early.
Oh, those retirements.
Yeah, so people have done that all around. I'm looking for like creative stuff.
I don't see how that
stuff
saves a lot of money myself.
Well, only if you don't replace. But so consequently, they're always asking me, and I felt like, What I should do, because a couple of them said, you know, you
ought to... You've developed a reputation about that, is my feeling.
Yeah, and so they've said...
Locally.
They said, you know, what you should do is, like, start your own business and then do consulting work and come in. But I love Dearborn Heights. That's where I put my attention to. But the point I was going to make with the lighting is that because it was such a large number, I asked to see the bill. That's the accountant side of me. So they showed me an invoice, and it had, like, DT Energy, City of Dearborn Heights, and it had, like, $68,000, you know, not an even amount. And I go, does anybody question, like, what's in this bill? And they go, no, we pay it every month, you know. So I hired a guy part-time, and we got all the detail, which was, like, 3 inches thick. And every lamppost in the city has a five alpha numeric digit, I think it's five or seven numbers on it. They're on all of the poles. Now I know where to find them, but I didn't back then.
Right.
So we took a sample, and I told a guy, came in, I said, look, I'm paying minimum wage. You go out there, no benefits, and you just go out and find these poles.
Uh-huh.
So he went out looking, and he found a 5 to 7% error rate in our billing.
Meaning there weren't no pulls with that number?
Couldn't find them. What I found out was that DTE is very good about, like, if Ned, you'd come and said, Mayor, we have a dark spot in my neighborhood. We've had 4 home burglaries. We need a light. I can call DTE and get a light, like, in 2 days.
But it costs your money.
It's going to cost an extra, won't cost the resident, but the city's going to get billed $650 approximately for that light. Well, they're good about adding lights, but if you came to me and you said, you know that light, I hate it, all my neighbors want it out, and I say, okay, I called DTE to take the light out, it doesn't come off the bill.
Well, hold your thought there for a minute as to what you found, what you were looking for. You are listening to The Heights, news and views about the city of Dearborn Heights, things of interest to the residents, of course. And you are listening to WHFR on 89.3 FM, here broadcasting from the Henry Ford Community College. And we are making waves here, and you could hear this program on the fifth Tuesday of every month. And our guest today is none other than the mayor of Dearborn Heights, Daniel S. Poletko. Not to lose your train of thought, because I just lost mine. When I asked you what your goals were, you specified a couple of interesting things. But when you came into being mayor, what did you find that you said, oh, my God, I didn't realize this? Now, you're a person that's been on the council for a quarter of a century plus 29 years. Was there a surprise that you didn't know about or couldn't have known about? Or said, this is an issue I got to fix. I didn't have the power before. I mean, generically, a major thing.
Well, I think one of the aspects is that on the council, you're part-time. The city of Dearborn Heights has a charter very similar to the cities of Detroit and Dearborn. It's a very strong mayor.
Strong,
from a government.
Yeah, okay.
So consequently, with a weak council, strong mayor, there's a lot of administrative things that a council member doesn't get involved with simply because the charter puts that power in the full-time mayor. So I was fortunate that I had a very good rapport with many of the mayors. They included me as the council chair on a lot of administrative items, but still I wasn't running the city per se. So, yeah, there were quite a bit of surprises.
So what do they do that the council, what's the major thing an average person wants to know? Because the average person will come to me and say, I want you to reduce my taxes. Like I said, I don't have any control over it, and the council persons don't have control over reducing your taxes. It's a function of what formulas that the state provides. But they think that you can do things that you don't do or can't do.
Well,
what's the big thing you found out you could do that wasn't being done?
Well, I think that we were able to take out almost $1 million in cost out of the cost stream. And the first 3 or 4 years there, we were able to duplicate taking out about $1 million out of cost. This year.
And why was that? What was Mayor Canfield not doing or not didn't understand?
Well, you know, I don't want to be critical of anybody. What I think is the difference is that
she has her pension. It's okay.
Yeah, but the difference is that in my training as a CPA,
an accountant, okay,
and when I look at numbers, they talk to me. I can see things, and one of the gifts, and I think part of it came from my dad. My dad had his own business, and one of the things is it's very difficult to, and we get trained as CPA. What makes a good CPA from a bad CPA or a good accountant from a bad accountant, I should say, and why some of us become...
It's questioning the numbers.
You're in essence, you're thinking, you're looking at things, and you're conceptually saying, how can I do this better? What can I get? How can I make this more efficient? That was part of my training. I used to get management letters to clients that said, okay, we charged you $25,000 for an audit, but here's $5 million worth of savings. So I didn't have trouble making collections. Even when I did tax returns for a while for citizens, I'd look at their personal stuff, and I would say, you know, if you did this, you did that, you could save money. What are you doing with your insurance? You know, and different things, even though I didn't sell those products. And then they would tell their relatives. I was starting to build an active practice just before I became a state representative. I don't know exactly. I mean, I think part of it was either have it or you don't, but I think part of it was my training.
I think people tend to pay bills. I know my sister told me something at the passing of her husband that he paid any bill anybody gave to him.
Yes,
and I think in a bureaucracy like the city, bills come and there isn't anybody there to question. First of all, it's not their money.
Right.
And so bringing that to the, you know, because I want the people listening to the program to have some understanding of what goes on, why it happens. They think things are happening that aren't happening. They think things should happen that can't happen. Right. So any intelligence that can be brought to the process.
Well, give you.
What would you like to do that you now learn being mayor for now? It's been 5-6 years now. It's 2004.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to do that nobody's doing?
Well, actually, there are things I am doing and will be announcing that I think are pretty exciting. One of it is that because of the revenue drops and property taxes, no interest income and stuff, I was looking for new revenue sources.
Oh, I was going to ask you, with the state and the Medicaid thing, which the federal government is not going to pass on to the states, the states are not going to be able to cover it. Your revenue sharing, what do we call it? What's the...
It's called revenue sharing.
It's revenue sharing, and state or municipal.
Yeah, it's revenue sharing, which part of it is constitutional and part of it is through legislation. They've almost eliminated all the legislative aspects, so the only thing we get is the constitutional.
What's the difference between the two? People should know.
Well, constitutional, Proposal A, when it came in... That the people voted on that, so there's formulas in there that cities and counties.
That's why the revenue sharing was specified in A.
Right, and they can't. The legislature can't touch that. They got to go back to a vote of the people. That we're down to 4.8
million.
That's
the one that took us from 4% to 6%, or that was the head.
Right. Well, so, all that.
And then the property taxes were capped. So that's part of that legislatively. Then constitutionally, what's the difference?
Well, that's the constitutional part. So we get 4.8 million. Then there's a legislative piece where the legislature has said that out of the formulas, we're going to give
a percentage.
Yeah, to the
cities.
So you
don't know what number that is.
Well, the only thing we know is it keeps getting reduced, and it's almost a zero.
What is it now? Nothing?
It would not surprise me if next year it went down to zero.
Okay, so the constitutional one you're not going to be able to get if they don't have the money. What are they going to do?
That's the problem. It's sales tax revenues drop.
So legislatively is zero. Now the taxes... This is the crucial one, your answer, because I think people need to understand this. when their assessment is coming down, they're eventually, not overnight, your tax bill comes down slightly.
Right.
You know, things go up high, but they come down slowly.
It's a moving
average. So your
average.
Income, you give us an idea of what was happening. Your tax, your budget's around $39 million, isn't it, if I remember
correct.
Right? So your income from taxes is being reduced percentage-wise how much lately?
The proper,
2% a year, 3%?
No, well, out of
worse
the,
than that?
Worse than that. It reduced $1.9 million. So that represented a drop of almost 13%. In that line.
Okay, you're talking about from $40 million, almost $2 million.
Right.
So that's...
So subtract $2 million for property taxes, subtract about $800,000 in state shared revenues, and other revenues probably about $500,000, and now you see the task that was before us this year.
Well, the $4.8 million was quite a bit. You still have to get that, don't you?
We'll still get the 4.8, but...
So what was the reduction? 800,000 from what?
Legislation portion.
Oh,
of the
part that we are anticipating will turn to zero.
Right.
You lost how much in reduced taxes?
$1.9
million. $1.9 million taxes.
And then there was another about $500,000 in revenues that are just not going to come in this year.
Okay, so if we take the total of that from your 3.9, what have we got? That's an important number.
It's about
10%. 2.7, almost $3 million.
Yeah, it's a little over $3
million. So it's a little over $3 million. Your budget is 39.
Right, but see, the three...
Now, that's an insurmountable number to save on somewhere else.
Well, that's why... I
think people are interested in that.
Yeah.
Because you're not a magician.
No, but what...
And the council are not magicians.
No, but I found a way to solve this.
Okay, great. That's what I want
to... That's how the budget was presented to in essence, tackle this. The way that we challenge this is for the $1.9 million, we basically were in the process of negotiating agreements, and in that particular area, we are looking to, in essence, have a couple million dollars in savings in the benefit area, predominantly in the healthcare.
Oh, you're looking to redo your healthcare program.
Correct.
Obviously, with some reductions, you have to do that.
Absolutely.
But
the other thing is...
In my own recollection, if I can interrupt you... The money that the city's budget in wages and benefit is almost 70% of the budget.
Correct.
So if I remember correctly,
correct.
The last time I added it up.
Yep.
And I think there isn't maybe much you can do about wages other than prevent the escalation of wages, but you mm-hmm. do have to do something about the benefit.
Yeah, and basically, for instance, like for the elected officials, when the Compensation Commission met back in late fall, I recommended that no increases be given because I had gone to the labor unions and said and told my department heads there will be no pay increases this year. We're going to hold every pay flat. It's
that
going to be a zero.
Sense. Is that something you can do, you can
yeah.
suggest,
yep.
or the unions want to agree or disagree?
No, I think we have a good relationship with all of my labor unions, and in fact, we had negotiated with police and fire kind of a zero agreement with wage reopeners, which both sides, they were hoping to maybe...
What does that mean, zero agreement with wage reopeners?
Well, we kept the wages at zero, but we agreed that every year we would look at them again. And it serves in two...
But firemen and policemen do well more so than the regular employees. Their compensation is considerably higher.
Well, it is higher, but at the same time... their particular task and the life aspect and the
I mean, there's no question about
yeah.
that. I'm just making a statement
correct.
That their benefit packages are higher as well.
Yes, and so we went and we are.
So it seems to me if you could do something there, you.
Well, we have and we are and have and I can't get in all the details because we're still negotiating.
But the question is, this $3 million that you think we're going to lose or has to be lost one way or another through no fault of yours or anyone else's,
right?
Can that be picked up in these compensation packages?
Well, part of it will.
Or a good percentage.
And then the other thing that we looked at, which we thought was extremely creative, was the fact that we had looked at a deferred retirement option program called the DROP that makes sense for Dearborn Heights. It does not make sense for all the communities.
Is this beyond the firemen and policemen are you talking about, or regular employees?
It is. No, it was for police and fire only.
Oh, the thing that the council voted 6-7-1
against? They turned it down, and we are in arbitration because in Michigan, police and fire cannot strike, but they do have a right under Act 312, and we're in binding arbitration, which is one of the reasons when you negotiate with police and fire, you have to be aware of the fact that you could be in a 312 binding arbitration situation. So what we did was the DROP program is a program that allows us to maintain existing levels of police and fire, but at the same time, putting people in a retirement status. It's like I make it similar to if.
But they say something. They don't actually retire. Their benefits are deferred or something.
Correct.
What is that about?
What happens is a person is retired, but they may not collect. You can't double dip, so you can't collect your retirement. So the retirement benefits stay in the plan. But their right to that is assured.
So why would they retire if they can't get a benefit?
Because of the fact that it's deferred. So they can collect it when they actually, they can sign up for 5 years, they could sign up for 3 years. It's money that they would be able to take out of the system in the 3 or 5 years after. But the interest earned on that particular money stays in the fund.
So they would actually not have a job and not collect anything?
No, they still have a job, and that's why I think this becomes a little bit difficult. You are an employee of the city. You still have your position. You're still paid. But your benefits are significantly reduced.
So you're not contributing to their benefit programs during that period?
Very little. There is.
I see. That's the saving.
That, and also it's something that works in our particular city. It will not work unless you also have a act called 345, which deals with public retirement. So what we do is when the employee elects to be in the DROP program, his health care benefit comes out of the 345 fund and not out of the general fund. So consequently, it's still coming out
Who
of the
funds
taxpayer.
The 345?
Taxpayers.
It's a state program. It's a city program.
It's a state legislation, but it's a city program.
It's a state, but you have to fund it.
The taxpayers fund it.
Yeah, this is my contention about just a little thing of my own. You know, years ago when people had trouble, the industrial workers didn't make as much money as people working for government. They worked less, but they were guaranteed a pension, and they were at least guaranteed a job at a lower. And then everybody wanted to have what the other guy had. I want the rate of the industrial workers, and the industrial workers said, I want the guarantee and the benefits that the municipal worker has. Somewhere down the line, this plane is going to crash.
But here's the point.
And we're at a stopping point now that the plane has crashed. God knows who's going to make that decision. We are lucky to have with us today, those of you listening to us, and are hopefully you're interested, especially Dearborn Heights residents. We are talking with the mayor of Dearborn Heights, Daniel S. Poletko, and he is educating us about what are the problems with mayors. And I'm going to let you know that we are you are listening to WHFR on 89.3 FM on your dial, broadcasting from the Henry Ford Community College right here in Dearborn, Michigan. And you are listening to, Jay, you wanted to...
Yeah, I'd like to... First of all, I'd like to say to Mayor Poletko, welcome to WHFR, and as station advisor here at WHFR. It's an honor to have you here. Sorry you haven't been around here before, because all the fame and glamour of coming into the studios is all the way to get information expressed is just great. And we talk about Dearborn Heights issues on our WHFR Journal Show on Fridays from 1 to 2. So, Ned, that's my plug for the Journal Show, first of all. But I was going to ask you, since we talked to Mayor of Dearborn, O'Reilly, back at the end of May, May 28th, one of the things, or the major thing he did this year to balance the budget with the same sort of property value declines and costs going up, was that he drew what he thought was doable from every sort of fund balance in the city. The rainy day fund, but even various pension funds, the pools of money that sit there because, well, depending on eventualities, you need it there. And his finance director, in fact, said to the city council that it's the last year you can do that. This is the minimum sort of buffer in all these funds, and so we don't know what we're going to do with declining costs for next year yet, of course. But does Dearborn Heights have that sort of luxury, or are your fund balances for things like retirement and pension funds pretty much at the sort of buffer area right now?
Well, there's a philosophical question to what they're doing. In fact, when I was up in the legislature, those are one-time, I would say one-time fixes. I do not look at one-time fixes as the solution for any kind of budget, whether it was an individual or a municipality or a corporation. So consequently, the kinds of fixes that I have tried to put in the budget, these health care savings, the savings as a result of the DROC program, will continue year after year after year, so they're not one-time savings or one-time grabbing of resources, because next year you can defer your particular problem. And I'm not saying that I don't know enough about the city of Dearborn and its dynamics. There are times when that is a good solution. That is not a solution that I have looked at, and I also am a little bit concerned that when money is put away for purpose A or purpose B, I think everybody comes to the assumption that it's going to be spent for that purpose A or purpose B. So consequently, I've not looked at those kinds of solutions in order to, let's say, make Dearborn Heights budget work.
Well, Jay brought up an interesting point about rainy day funds. My understanding is, I thought from attending council meetings, the ideal thing is to have a 10% rainy day fund, which in this case would be $3.5 to $4 million.
Correct.
Such a thing exists?
We were at about 14% before last year.
14% of the budget as a rainy day fund?
Correct.
That's pretty good.
Well,
10% is all you need.
Well, we have one of the highest ratings, if not the highest rating in Wayne County for all municipalities. I've had the council and I have had to go into that rainy day fund as a result of the state shared revenues being decreased and some other property taxes. So we're not at 14% right now.
Is it invested someplace making money? So you keep it at 10 and you only spend whatever the investment is?
Well,
the growth of the investment, I mean.
Personally, I seem to be able to get better interest on my home savings account than the treasurer can get on $3.5 million, so I can't figure it out. When you have the treasurer in one day, I'll explain it to you.
I can't
believe somebody with just a few thousand can make more money than somebody with $3.5 million, but apparently I do this every single time.
What is it? There must be some limitation as to what he can do with it.
Well, we originally had put that, and that was one of the shortfalls, we had put that he would be able to earn at least $250,000 in a year with a $3.5 million fund balance. And he came back and told us that, no, the banks are charging him now for everything, and that rather than making money, we had to pay about $50,000 to the banks in order to have the honor of them keeping our money.
The banks. They're the banks.
So I don't. We saw. So that was a unexpected decrease in what we thought would be some revenue. Years ago, the city used to make almost $1 million in interest income, and now we're paying banks.
Now, you're talking about saving money of reduction, the accelerated retirement, and of course you cannot fill these other positions. You can't do what the UAW did. You used to make $35 an hour, but you're going to $14.
Well, here,
can you do that?
Yeah, but
why can't you change the value of the job?
Well, we have, and but
oh, you do.
But okay. Here, yes, new people coming in are not paid as much as the people that retire. However, because of the largeness in the dollar amounts that we had to face. Rather than
for the retirement, you mean?
No, for the fact that we went through, we had to find like $3.2 million in savings in order to balance the budget. So for the police and fire, in order to maintain city services as they are, I would have to replace every policeman and fireman that retired. What I basically did—that's
the law.
No, it's basically to operate a 24-hour police and fire.
Aren't you required to, as a certain percentage of the population, isn't there a state law that you have to have so many?
No, City of Dearborn has a ordinance.
Maybe that's where I heard it.
But Dearborn Heights does not. Now, Dearborn Heights.
That's where I heard it from O'Reilly, because Jay and I do his show on occasion.
Okay, well, he has a situation that they have minimum manpowers, so consequently, based upon their population, they have to have so many policemen and firemen. That is recommended numbers that are given to us. We're not under that same constraint.
Why don't you adopt the same thing if it makes sense?
Because we couldn't afford it.
You mean I don't know how many policemen we have. Something like 90 in Dearborn Heights?
No, we're in the low 80s, and firefighters there's about 40.
So if you were two policemen less, I mean that's a ton of money, isn't it, in terms of benefit and salary?
Well, except...
And it shouldn't make any difference in operating a city by two people.
Well, it will. And
if you have two retirees, I'm talking about.
Right, but it does affect things. For instance, one of the items that we were able to do in the city is we made a shift. They used to have three 8-hour shifts constituted a day in Dearborn Heights Police Department. We now run two 12-hour shifts.
2 8-hour shifts versus?
There were 3 8-hour shifts.
Yes.
We're now the two 12-hour shifts.
And you pay them, I guess, don't
well,
you?
No, we pay them regular rates.
They get paid for 12 hours, but not for overtime.
There's no overtime after hour 9. But what happens is that one
so
week...
So they work 3 hours for free?
No, what happens is they're on 4 days 1 week, so they work like 40...
They're like airlines.
44, and then next week, next week they'll run. They work 3 days, so they're 36. Well, over a 2 week period, what it did for us is that it eliminated a lot of overtime, and I'll tell you how it happens.
Do they mind?
No, they. At first, we had them take a vote.
Who invented this mathematics? Chief Gust.
Actually, it came out of a brainstorming session in which I will never forget it. We were sitting around, and I won't embarrass, but somebody came. One of the department heads came up with an idea that we try not to laugh, but it was so ridiculous. We all started to laugh.
This is a meeting of department heads.
Yes, and my police chief thought about it and said, you know what? What if we went to 12-hour shifts? And it was like a result of that thing.
And the math of that works out, you're saving money.
It saves a lot of money because here's how the overtime gets saved. A police officer may be on his end of his shift, and he gets a call for a neighbor family disturbance or something. Uh-huh. He cannot sit there and say, well... like in a store, and one cashier can take the place of another cashier, those officers have to stay with that particular situation. Consequently, when their 8 hours are up, we're paying them overtime, and it may be an hour and a half for that situation to be resolved.
So what does the policemen's union say about this? They didn't say anything?
We worked with them. a lot of the officers like it because now they get an extra day off in a two-week period. The concern that we had from a management standpoint is 12 hours in a police car in a stressful day, I didn't want police officers coming out of the car in the 10th and 11th hour and start to have an attitude. So we were concerned about how that would affect them.
I thought they were born with attitude.
So we were concerned about that aspect. They had some concerns, but it has actually worked out very well.
Well, that's good.
So it saved money. Yep.
So you came into office and you used your skills as an accountant, and we saved a lot of money. But that was a different time, but it wasn't a problem then. In other words, if these savings weren't made, it wouldn't have been the end of the world. We were paying the bills, but we were paying them unnecessarily. Now it's a little bit more important.
Yeah, it's more of a crisis, and the formulas that I have, because I've got models to financially run cities that I have created and made and use those models for when we do contract negotiations and other type things. And so I run those numbers through my models. They're Excel schedules that I've created. And the models have, originally when I set those all up, they were good for 5 years. I am now having to change those models, it seems like, every 6 months,
Are
8 months.
These computer models that you found somewhere and adopted or
created them
yourself?
I created them myself. They're in essence my mental. And so they are able to handle. I can sit there and think of this stuff, but at the same time, it allows me to do the dynamics of a change, and so I'm able to run what-ifs through their scenarios of that sort, and it's just that I put that mental thought process into Excel schedules that are, I don't know where you'd buy anything like that. It's just a matter that I created them. So I use those.
Well, now we know in Dearborn Heights we have a tremendous problem of flooding, which we'll talk about, but other than that, do we have other serious problems that are, you know, that other than the circumstance of the present economy, something inherent with us in Dearborn Heights?
Well, I think the other thing that we're battling is a major housing crisis and property values dropping, people losing their jobs.
You can't control that.
No, but when the census is being taken, and we hopefully will maintain a enough population, because if we drop below 50,000, we're going to have some real hard problems.
Well, that's an interesting point. What does the census dropping mean to you?
Well, if the city right now...
And below 50,000, what happened?
50,000 is a very key number because...
Well, I know we got 36,000 registered voters.
Right.
So you shouldn't have trouble being at 50,000 with children and people.
I would certainly hope not, but that is very critical for Dearborn Heights in a sense.
Okay, what does it mean? Let me and the rest of the world know. That's that's an interesting fact. Let's see what that means.
Under the federal programs like Community Development Block Grant, we're a direct recipient. If we drop below 50,000, we get included in the Wayne County. So like a city like Allen Park doesn't get its own money. We're getting $1.2 million. Allen Park's got to go through the county. So that's a big determination.
And the county's closed on Friday. Did you know that? People are on...
They got furlough days.
Furlough days.
So, and a lot of other federal programs have this $50,000 requirement that you're a direct recipient. It's almost a division between a middle-sized community.
So what is it worth to us in dollars, roughly, for me in my head? It's worth $1 million a year to us?
Well, I'm going to say that for every person, we were trying to figure out, but the congressional staff and I put our heads together. We think every person over a 10-year period represents approximately $1,800 in funding. So if we think we're at 60,000, so 10,000 people times $1,800 over 10 years is a lot of money, and that's what it would mean to the city of Dearborn Heights. That would be the difference between a vibrant, good community.
$2 million?
It's more than that. It's a lot of money over 10 years.
Well, call it $2,000 a person, but we don't know how many persons less.
Well, I said we're at risk would be about $10,000. So $10,000 times $2,000 over 10 years is more than a couple million.
Let's do the math.
Might be
okay.
20 million.
It's time for us to do a station break. You are listening to an extremely knowledgeable person about the city of Dearborn Heights. He's been mayor for the last 6 years and councilman for 29 before that, and that is, and he is Daniel S. Paletko. And you are listening to him on WHFR 89.3 FM, making waves from the community. From the community, Henry Ford Community College, right here in Dearborn, Michigan. And you can podcast this program. You want to listen to it again, just go into our forum, go into 89.3.fm, look for June 29th, and look at this time slot at 1 o'clock, and you will find this program again. Mayor needs to know that so he can hear it, right, Jay? Anyway, let's get to how many minutes do we have left, Jay? 10 minutes. Okay, let's get into the flooding issue. So other than we have two gigantic issues, we have a loss in our budget from roughly $39 million minus some $3.5 to $4 million due to the circumstances of the economy, which you have an inventive way to solving. I attended a council meeting when they were talking about I did not realize that the city pays for the damage of people's houses and due to floods. Where in the world do you get that money from, since it's you? We're not talking about flood insurance.
No, only if it is proven that the city was at fault.
Only if the city's at fault.
Correct.
Okay, well, that's interesting.
So, but... state law requires, though, that a resident must
put a notice. That fund? What do we call the incident? What's the name for it?
Well, they're flooding incidents, but it would be a basement backup of sewer water.
It has to be sewer water?
Well, it could be storm and sewer water. It's coming in through the sanitary system. It's not...
So it has to. It could be either, and you call the fund. What are they? The fund doesn't have a name.
Well, there is no such thing as
a fund. It's out of your general.
No, it's not paid by general. Water and sewer is a separate entity unto itself.
Oh.
It is not connected to the general fund. In fact.
So all the money that's generated from the water and sewer bill you keep. You have to pass on some to the city of Detroit, don't you?
Well, most of it is for the city of Detroit. More than half is in the water.
Yep.
And then in the sewage, we have to pay either the city of Detroit or Wayne County because it has to be treated before it's discharged into the Detroit River.
So you actually... Well, so we about how much money do we have in this fund in order to pay?
I cannot disclose that.
But there's money in there for these people.
Well, you know, we're subject to lawsuits, so I can't.
Yeah, okay.
It's got no money in it.
I was wondering where the money came from. Anyway, how would you like to describe, what do you think is the reason that Dearborn Heights has this problem? I have my ideas, but you're a lot closer to Wade and Trim than I do.
Well,
what can you do about these people? Are up in arms. They're going nuts at the last meeting I went to.
This we could almost do a separate show on because I've got the Ecorse Creek, the Lower Rouge, and the Middle Rouge, so I'm in three drainage districts.
You're in three watersheds.
And in order to really...
And none of that has to do with the sewers. How the sewers are designed.
Well, there's...
That's another problem.
But that's a very complex answer. I certainly would take an entire show to even address.
What about just generically? So the problem that people should understand, it can't be helped that we have three watersheds going through our community. Mm-hmm. And probably, my guess is the sewer systems are probably designed inadequately for the need. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having problems.
Well,
they could be improved upon. When things were done in 1950s for the township and the 60s are different than what happened today, I would imagine.
Well, what you have is, even if we put in bigger sewers in the city of Dearborn Heights, is that years ago when we were a township, all these communities bought a certain amount of capacity in these pipes that are in the county system.
Yeah, that's what I heard you say at a meeting once. What do you?
And
so that means there should be restrictions as the water goes down.
Well, there is restrictions into the county pipe. So even if we collect more water, we can't force in the system. And then
it has to be diverted.
Look at Dearborn Heights. When I was a little boy, there wasn't much past Garden City. You had Wayne, but you didn't have Westland, and Livonia wasn't developed. Now all these communities have developed the airport area. And the pipes didn't get bigger. It's
right.
The same pipes.
This is exactly my contention that as to what the part of what the problem is. The real issue is what they're doing in Dearborn with these retention things they're building. I mean, the only way you can stop a thing like that is to retain water, whether it's sewage water or storm water. And then it depends on the luck of the draw as to where you're situated. You know, if you're in the floodplain, you're in the floodplain. You can't change that. If you're depending on where our water tables are in different parts of the city, you can't really change that. So, you think that, is there anything else you'd like to say about that? Because the people are more interested in that.
Well,
and you can give us some idea if you have any new initiatives. We actually talked a lot about these new initiatives and the green city idea. Were you going to save anything in that? We can close out on those ideas.
Yeah, I would like to tell you something that we are very excited about. There is a company that we're looking to possibly partner with, and it's in geothermal. And the city basically, as they run a water and sewer department, would now start to operate a geothermal department. And that would be a source of potential revenue. And how this works is in the earth is always 51 degrees around here. So consequently, we have the city of Wyandotte, city of Toledo, have partnered with a particular company, and we have given the fact I attend a lot of meetings at a different
place. Where's the
places.
Land to do this? It's like putting a sprinkler system 50 feet down into the ground, and it's a little,
They bore a hole into the ground,
and
taking that temperature, they're able to heat and cool
circulate
your house
water,
at significantly reduced rates, and there
is this for our municipal buildings or for the people to purchase?
It's the intent to make this available to the residents. We will first do some city buildings, but we've had suggestions that the reduction in your gas bill will be 50% to 70%.
Well, lately, as an architect, I've been attending several seminars about green and LEED, what we're calling a sustainability. We have to take continuing educational things on. They're very interesting and getting extremely complicated.
This is
beyond this geothermal thing is not new.
No,
it's been around a long time, and I never thought about it myself. I think I'll do it in my house. And somebody said, "Well, you should have done it before you put the sprinkler system." But, everything is willing to look in the panels on the roof for the electric. What we can save, where the crossing point is on that.
Well, I do have a company coming in the city that is.
Anyway, we ought to look at that, see if there's a way to save on that.
Well, yeah, they're going to put in a solar cell farm or solar cell facility in an area in the city, they're partnering with a movie studio, and they're hoping to locate in Dearborn Heights, and we, in fact, have a tentative sales agreement for some city land. And if you notice, because I was asked earlier by Jay about one-time money, the land has been tentatively sold to these individuals. but I have not included that in any of these budget numbers because I'm afraid that that's one-time money.
Is this the power thing that we have down in the south end, that land?
Yeah, it's
that's the only
it's where the old incinerator used to be. So that's another proposal that we are very close to announcing.
Well, before we're going to wrap up our program today, you've been a wonderful guest, right, Jay? We learned a lot. Hopefully we asked the right questions, or we didn't have to ask anything. You told us everything we needed to know. The education, the mayor, we're extremely pleased that you are our first guest for this program for Dearborn Heights. We'll have, hopefully in the future, other department heads will explain what they do and how it works. Probably one half hour for one, a half hour for another. And this flooding thing is something that the Dearborn Heights has to either live with. The people are upset. I don't have a basement in my house, but I don't believe in basements anyway. But Mayor, thank you very much.
And thank you for I'm honored to be a guest on the program here, and it was nice to come back to my alma mater.
Well, this is a nice alma mater. Nobody, University of Michigan doesn't have a studio like this. And now we'll go to our closing. Jay, thank you.
You have been listening to the Forum series of WHFR talk shows presented on WHFR on 89.3 FM, making waves from Henry Ford Community College. Today you've just heard the Dearborn Heights News and Views show, hosted by Ned Apigian, discussing issues affecting the city and residents of the city of Dearborn Heights, which will be presented every 3 months from 1 to 2 p.m. We look forward to presenting our next program on September 29th, 2010. Thank you for listening. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. Did you know that you can register right now for fall classes at Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn? Get a jump start on your education. Don't wait. Visit hfcc.edu to register today.
If these these extraterrestrials are so highly evolved, how come it is that they only address people named Bubba who are out hunting and fishing?
I'm Fife Symington. In 1997, during my second term as governor of Arizona, I saw something that defied logic and challenged my reality.
I saw one, but I don't know where it just disappeared.
And the saucer flew right over him and put down three little gear and landed out on the dry lake bed.
Governors, U.S. presidents, and former astronauts are among the millions who have witnessed UFOs. Many are now coming forward with their stories. Investigate the evidence the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when WHFR presents We Are Not Alone.